Check it out. Territory. Ain't nobody been there. You understand? Undiscovered. So call somebody and tell somebody. There's a new day, and there's also a new sheriff in the town. A lot of things will be exposed real soon. Love you. Be good.
Hello, promoters, and welcome to episode number 176 of Uncharted Territory. And folks, just before we started recording, we were discussing what a miracle this is, that it went beyond episode one. We are just amazed. We are here for the 176th time. Well, actually, more than that, but who's counting? To be with all of you good friends and talking about the game that we love and talking about this hobby that we all love and know so well. I am Stu Lowry. I'm your host this evening, or this morning, or this afternoon, whenever you happen to be listening. It is my privilege to host this esteemed panel for the, well, probably 180th time, technically, talking about this game. And before we get started, let's go around the Zoom room and find out how all our panelists are doing this very evening and get the weather update. Corey Olson, how are things in Minnesota?
Hey, Stu. Things are well. Thankfully, no snow. But it was, you know, a little bit cooler the last couple of days. We had some really nice, we had a really nice Sunday, about 65 degrees, not 69, Chad, not 69. Today was a little bit cooler, like high 50s, low 60s, but still very, very nice. Got a little bit of rain. It's kind of supposed to stay that way the next couple of days. We'll see what happens here. My sons had their first track meet last Thursday, and it was friggin' cold. I mean, it was miserable. I mean, it's one thing to watch middle school track, that's hard enough to watch, but when it's cold, makes it worse. Yes, Chad.
How cold was it?
It was so cold. It was so cold I can't come up with a joke. But it was cold. It was friggin'
lame.
Cold. Yeah. But what's hot is this show, and that's the truth.
This show is smoking.
Yes, it is. And we're just getting started.
Just warming up.
Uh-huh.
Tim Dalton, how are things in the Northeast? Do y'all have pollen up there, Tim? We have so much pollen, we would love to ship it to you.
You know, I think we do, but it's covered under all the rain. We actually had a decent day temperature-wise. It was in the mid-60s today. And I do love the mid-60s, you know, the Beatles, the Stones, the Dave Clark Five, all of that. It's good stuff. But a lot of rain, a lot of precipitation of late. And although temperatures this time of year are usually in the high 50s, and so we were above that, so that's good. We're able to get some windows open a little bit and get a little fresh air in the house, so that's always nice this time of year. But Buffalo's doing good. Although, you know, if Corey, if you're cold, you know what you could do.
What could I do, Tim?
All you need to do, Corey, is go to tkostore.com. That's right. Wow. I'm getting this out of the way early. TKO store. You go to tkostore.com, you can get an Uncharted Territory hoodie or a sweatshirt that'll keep you nice and toasty warm in these chilly days. And this, in, you know, you get in the spring up in Minnesota. I mean, it's tkostore.com. All your Uncharted Territory merch, it's all there. You know, you can have your face on your chest while you're warming up and while your friends are walking around and they're all chilly and you're going, hey, if you put my face on your chest, you'll get warm like me. It works. I mean, you might get slapped in the face a few times, but your friends will eventually say, hey, you were right. When I put your face on my chest, I do get warmer than I was before. And the other people that can try this too. I mean, all our listeners should. It's an easy way to warm up, and if you're a little chilled.
He's a school teacher. If he does that, he won't be able to go back to his job.
Yeah.
He'll get banned from being within 1,000 yards.
There are plenty of jobs available out there. You just got to look for them. That's all. But that's all. So there you go. The t-shirt promo's out of the way early so we can get down and dirty on the topics tonight.
Sweet. I forgot where we were. Chad Olson. It's hard to follow that, but how are things in Gilbert, Iowa?
Oh, windy. I believe we had entered hurricane season down here in the Midwest because it's windy and it just doesn't stop blowing. I believe
it's actually wabbit season. I'm not positive. Yeah.
Willie, it is, but here's how windy it was. You know how windy it was?
How windy was it?
That was fucking terrible, people.
How windy was it?
Never mind.
It was so windy last night at the Gilbert High School track meet, they couldn't have the high jump. Because apparently it would blow the jumpers. I don't know if they missed the pad or got hit by a javelin on the way down. I don't know what the hell happened. But could
they do a low jump? Because is that a thing?
Are these kids?
I mean, I'm just thinking
pounds?
If maybe they, you know, I could, if they just lower the bar. And by God, you know, if you're listening to this, you know all about lowering the bar.
The bar already.
But I mean, you know, I would think that might work out a little easier for them.
You know, I don't know because I oddly enough, I don't even know if I've ever been to a track and field meet because watching people fucking turn left for hours on end it doesn't sound exciting. I don't know. Wait, I have been to a track and field meet. I went to your son's track and field meet last year. We went home from a conference. That was great. First time. Okay, so I've been to one track and field meet for about 25 minutes. But I would think the wind, I guess it depends what direction it is. If it's in the right direction, it would help lift you over the bar. But if it's in maybe you just jump and your face hits the bar because you don't get high enough. Speaking of not being high enough, I think this is a show you best not listen to sober. I'll give you a minute to go get a drink or a CBD or whatever your drug of choice is and resume with us here shortly. Corey, please take us to a musical interlude. Yeah, okay, back to you, Stu.
Thank you, Chad. Well, I'm here in Virginia. We have pollen upon pollen upon pollen, and we've had no rain in sight for almost 2 weeks. We need a gully washer to get rid of all this pollen. It is just bad. I cut the grass earlier, and I was swimming in the stuff. I had to take a broom and just sweep me off. It was horrible. Temperatures are great. Pollen, not so great. But we'll hopefully get rain here before too long and get rid of all this pollen. I may have to move out of the South. I bitch about it all the time. So it's just getting too much as I get older.
Hopefully, Stu, your wife swept you off before this podcast tonight.
My Big Ben and Charlie Brown swirling about me. All right, well, let's get into what's new and what's dominating the hearts and minds of promoters right now is the Road to Galacticon, which is next Sunday, I believe, if I have my dates right. An extravaganza to be enjoyed by all. I'm sure there will be lots of tournaments and good times in that regard. I'm sure there'll be some positive. There will be some special releases pertaining to or specific to Road to Galacticon. Any thoughts on Road to Galacticon? I personally have enjoyed all these virtual get-togethers. I think, they were essential during the pandemic. And one of the first things that really kind of got this community going again. Now they're good to whet one's appetite for Galacticon, which is on the horizon. Any thoughts on Road to Galacticon, gentlemen?
Corey? Just to be clear, promoters, if you want the exclusive Road to Galacticon card releases, you don't have to attend in person. You just got to register. So say you register and then you get invited to an impromptu Cinco de Mayo fiesta. You can still get your cards. You don't have to come onto the Zoom room.
Corey.
Yes?
I don't think we need to belabor that point.
Ooh.
Because last week I covered it ad nauseum and there were no questions this week about it.
Yeah.
So I think everyone in the universe is going to show up. I think they're going to break records. I think they're going to sell out the online convention, just like CCW used to sell out their pay-per-views.
Right.
And then I think it'll just be amazing. And a good time will be had by thousands and thousands of Champions of the Galaxy, Legends of Wrestling, and Indie Wrestling, Phil Singer Gang fans, Phil Singer Games fans, as we start the march to Galacticon on Cinco de Mayo.
Mm-hmm.
I did notice Rock Riddle, is he budgeted for 45 minutes or something? He was grossly.
That's not going to work.
That's not going to happen.
No. That's going to be his introduction of himself.
The road to Galacticon is a long and winding road when Rock Riddle is the guest. How you like that, Timmy? I threw in a little Beatles for you.
I liked it. That was good. Nice.
Keeping our mid-60s theme.
Yes.
Anything else on Road to Galacticon? I'm looking forward to it. I'll be there for at least some of the festivities. So get us all.
Did we ever figure out what a tarp skunk was?
Yes.
Yeah, I think Corey found a definition.
I know.
Yes. I'm yep.
Like a ring rat.
Oh, a low rent ring rat.
They all are, Stuart.
There you go. All right. Well, let's get into tonight's main event. Our topic is a look back at Legends 10, one of the original black and white sets. There were some great names in this set, certainly from my vantage point, with one name topping them all, a name that up until that point in time I didn't think we would get, but more on him later.
Mr. X?
Exactly. Before he became Doctor. So with that, we're going to start our discussion with our first two names, both fun ones. We'll have Tim lead the discussion on that. That's going to be William Muldoon and Mr. Fuji. Take it away, Tim.
Thanks, Stu. Yeah, William Muldoon, I mean, that was just a tough card because you're like, what am I? And first of all, I just want to say the art on these was fantastic. Steve Stan, I thought did a great job, because obviously you're not going to get a lot of high resolution pics of William Muldoon back in the day, but that was a tough card to stat, because you're like, how do you really get into these vintage guys? And then you see that he had a 7-hour match with somebody, and so I guess I kind of decided to go with not a big finish, but a couple of add ones and a lot of defense. So his matches might not, be quick and exciting, but they're going to go a while. And we also did the gimmick, which I think it's the only time it's been done, where basically the first fatigue token that he gets, you just ignore, because he's just in such great condition that, he's not a 60-minute man. He's like a 6-hour man. It was a fun card to work on, and something just really different. And I hope that people, enjoyed it and it worked well for them. But I really enjoyed work, and I loved reading the book, The Solid Man. I wasn't able to read the entire book, but I got a copy. I sat in the Buffalo Library actually downtown and during a few lunch hours and got it out of the rare book room and was going through it, trying to get some additional things to put on the card. But just a really, really cool guy. Who had a really cool life, was the first president of the New York State Athletic Club and was trying to clean up boxing and trained a lot of boxers. I believe Gene Tunney, when he won the world title, thanked William Muldoon for getting him in shape for the title match. So just a really cool guy, really interesting guy. And I was thrilled to have him for the set. Mr. Fuji, another one. The problem was at this point, we didn't really have his tag partners in the game. We didn't have Saito. We didn't have, we still don't have Tanaka, but we didn't have a lot of tag partners for him. So we kind of focused a little bit on his singles career, which was actually pretty good when you look on the West Coast and some of the matches he had out there and some of the opponents and his record out there. I mean, he was a pretty solid singles competitor before he wound up in WWF and WWE and all of that later in his career. But I thought it was really kind of cool working on this. It kind of gave us a different look at what a lot of people were familiar with maybe later in his career when he was more of a tag team guy and then turned into a manager. It was kind of a nice little look at that, but I really enjoyed looking at both of these guys and trying to come up with stats for the cards, because I believe I worked on them both, and yeah, it was just a really cool kind of a duo here, and I think they were both pretty well done, and I think people enjoyed using the cards. But you know, what do I know? I don't know. What are everybody else's thoughts on these two?
Corey?
I'll just say, yeah, Fuji and Saito as a team with these black and white cards had, I believe, the longest USWA tag team title reign. So I thought they just really worked out well together. Fun tag team. I like Fuji having the salt gimmick on there and all that. I've not used William Muldoon yet, but I think Tim did a really good job. You know, given the structure of the game of trying to do a way where he could have a really long matches. You know, he's got his level two offense is very unique, having that number five covered, but then an add one, and then he's got another add one on level three and a low rated finisher. But you look at other aspects of his card, he's got very strong defense, good pin rating, good charts, you know, very lowest DQ rating possible. So hopefully, you know, it's worked out that he's been able to have long matches for those that have used him. Hoping to use him at some point just to try him out and see how he works. You know, of course, now we have him in color through the Hall of Fame sets. But yeah, just, I think Tim did a really good job on this.
I agree. And I agree that artwork is sensational. It's another Stanley home run. Chad, do you have any thoughts on these guys?
I will just echo that the artwork is amazing for both of them. And I really like what Tim did with William Muldoon and the do not count the first pin attempt, add one, whatever. And it is a very unique card. And yeah, Fuji, it was great to have him. And of course, when Saito showed up a set or two later, I don't remember off the top of my head, it was good to have him as well. So that way we had one of those classic tag teams from the late 70s, early 80s.
Very well. Thank you, gentlemen. Let's move on to our next two cards in this set. These are favorites of mine, a little Memphis flavor. Corey, why don't you lead us in the discussion of Eddie Gilbert and Bill Dundee?
Thank you, Stu. Yeah, I was very excited to have these two. I mean, I think Stu introduced it saying we had a lot of names here. And, you know, while these two might not be the biggest names, I was really excited to get them both. You know, being a Memphis fan, enjoyed both of them. And Eddie Gilbert was one of my favorite wrestlers. He's even as a kid, used to watch him on Global on ESPN and loved seeing him there. You know, always wished he could have done more, especially on the national promotions. But yeah, just a very talented guy. And, you know, looking at his card here, you know, we gave him a distractor rating. He was definitely one of those guys, you know, kind of like Kevin Sullivan at times, where he was an active wrestler, a pushed wrestler, and a manager at the same time. So it, you know, really felt he should have a distractor rating. You know, this is one of, I feel like this is one of the first cards where we did kind of the, hidden finisher, or alternate finisher off of the primary finisher, where he mainly does the hot shot, but on the certain rolls can do the fireball. But, you know, he definitely did the fireball a lot, even as a babyface. I remember him using it from time to time. And so it made sense to have it on there in some form. Yeah, I think the card turned out really well. Bill Dundee, I remember, I did a lot of the work on Bill Dundee. I remember watching a lot of Memphis footage. And, you know, he was kind of a tough one as far as the strength of the card, because obviously big star in Memphis, but not as much in other places. You know, you get his little pushes here and there. And the other thing I remember that was really hard, it was hard to pick a finisher. I think the what we called the superstar bomb, sometimes some places they called it bombs away, but it's that sit down splash off the top rope. I think that was the most consistent move he used. He used it in other places. I know when he wrestled in Central States and Jim Crockett in 86, I saw him win matches with it there. The thing was, in Memphis, even until probably about 85, 86, top rope moves were still illegal. So he would do it in Memphis in like a no DQ match or something like that. Or he'd do it and then get disqualified or do it behind the ref's back and win that way. But I just felt that was the most, you know, consistent finisher that he had. But you'd read a lot of the results and watch videos. He'd win a lot with, like, you know, sunset flips and small packages and kind of things out of nowhere like that. So, you know, his career record may not have won a lot with that superstar bomb, but yeah, but it was definitely a move he did use a lot. So I was glad to, like I said, glad to get both of these guys in the game. They've done a lot in my USWA. Both still active. I've switched over to their color cards, but used both of these black and white cards a lot. Gilbert's been Southern champ and had a brief run with a world title. Dundee actually hasn't won titles yet, but it has a great win-loss record and is just one of those guys in my Fed that hasn't, I think he'll win a title at some point, but doesn't have to win a title to be a top star.
Good deal. Dundee's become one of my favorite Legends cards of them all. I've just really had a whole lot of fun with him. Tim, any thoughts on these two?
Yeah, I was really happy to get these guys. Dundee, obviously we've talked, just it was such a star in Memphis and such a big deal there. I always liked him a little bit better as a babyface than a heel, but he's one of those guys too. You could plug in either way. You can use him in tag teams. You could, I love those type of guys, where you can put them on either side and put them in singles, put them in tag, and they're going to do a good job for you. Gilbert, I was thrilled. I think on the artwork, I remember talking to, and I might've like emailed Steve Stanley on this and said, hey, because I think if you look at the photo reference, he's not wearing the sunglasses. He's got the Hot Stuff jacket and he's kind of pointing to it, but he's not wearing the sun. And I'm like, hey, can we get the sunglasses from this photo and put them on this photo? And I thought he did a great job with that, kind of combining that element in. Gilbert was, I had big plans for him in the NWF. I mean, he had come in right around the time I stopped playing. But he was going to have more of a role later on. He came in, he was just kind of a manager for me, with Hot Stuff International, and was going to have a little more of a role, maybe 5 or 6 months down the line, but I never got 5 or 6 months down the line. So he was what he was, but I thought, I was thrilled to have him in here. I always thought he was a great talent. I remember, back when he was in WWF and he would team with Kurt Hennig, and you could tell that both these guys had a future because they were just so good in the ring. And they would find a way to be stars somehow, even if they weren't that big at the time. Really cool guys to have in the game. I was thrilled about getting both of these guys.
Our friend Bob Smith last week was doing a show on Memphis and said both of these guys could do more with less than any wrestlers he ever saw. I mean, when they got in the ring, you completely lost track of the fact that they were both shorter men. So they were large in stature and made you believe. Chad, any thoughts on these two?
I just echo everybody's sentiments. Great artwork. I look to see what they won the AWA tag belts with, because this is it kind of looks like he's holding an AWA tag belt. If you look, there's kind of a W and A at the top. But when they won the belts from the notorious combination of Pretty Boy Doug Summers and Soldat Ustinov, because Boris Zukov had jumped to the WWF, superstar Bill Dundee used a second rope back rope press where you throw him into the buckle and he jumps off and then comes back off with a crossbody to pin Doug Summers. So, but I do remember it was hard to track down a finisher for superstar. And I grimace, Corey, because I thought, hadn't we done the alternate finisher thing for Terry Gordy yet or not? Maybe not. That could be crazy.
I guess so. I mean, yeah, as far as like where you kind of choose it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're right. You met, with that we had. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there were some others like where, singles finisher and tag or something like that. But
No, but it was very appropriate for Eddie Gilbert to have that on his card because he was so known for that evil fireball.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously with a person like you running in the Memphis territory area, it's good to have some of these guys in there.
Good deal. Thank you, gentlemen. Our next two names are Kevin Sullivan and Val Venus. And Chad will lead the discussion on both. Chad?
I mean, there's a tag team if you ever saw. Kevin Sullivan, I love this artwork too with the dog collar on and just the eyes on his picture there. He just looks like he's kind of, it's like one of those pictures on Scooby-Doo where you move it around and the eyes follow you. They're very piercing eyes. I thought it was super exciting to have Kevin Sullivan in the game. And obviously fans did too. based on the amount of outcry for him to be colorized until we finally gave that to them recently. They love their Kevin Sullivan. He's kind of a hard guy to stat too, because he didn't always use a consistent finisher, and I think we changed it for the color version, right? Because we took it off that double foot stomp and gave him something.
Pile driver.
Pile driver, thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, because in Florida he would do that short pile driver a lot. Yeah, the double foot stomp. This was probably based a little more on his time in like WCW, JCP, you know, varsity club era. But I think this is a fantastic drawing and good stats for him, a very popular character. And then Val Venus, you know, one of the, probably at the time, one of the newer, more modern guys we had signed. I thought this was pretty good artwork too. Glad that towel didn't drop anymore. We'd have a wardrobe malfunction, and boy, that would get freaky. But, you know, I liked Val Venus. You know, Tim and I were talking about how having a porn star as a wrestler for our NGO bootleg set, and then like 2 weeks later, they must have been eavesdropping on us again. Here comes Val Venus. So,
yep. We thought, oh, nobody's going to do this. You know, we'll have our guy there with Biff Malibu for the NGO set. And like, who would ever think about doing this? And then boom, on TV a couple of weeks later, there's Val Venus.
And, you know, he was kind of a harder guy to stat because he was kind of at the beginning of the era where title switches became more frequent and, holding a title wasn't as sacred. So you'd have a guy like Val Venus who'd win the Intercontinental belt or the European title or, you know, some of those things a few times. And it didn't really have the gravitas that it did back, like when Ricky Steamboat or Randy Savage or even the Honky Tonk Man had the belt. So it's like, how do you, you know, stat these guys? And I think we've gotten better about coping with that because that's just the way wrestling is now. And, you know, 15 title reigns equates to about five, you know, John Cena and Ric Flair kind of equal now, right? But somebody who wins the, you know, Intercontinental belt four times, like me, they're like a one-time TV champ or something probably. So, but it's good to have him in the game and have a little more modern folks in there because, you know, definitely attracts different audiences to the game.
Agreed on all points. Tim, any thoughts on these two?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of neat too. I mean, Val Venus, I mean, having kind of a lot more recent kind of guy was different. I mean, so that was pretty cool. And, you know, I always thought he was like an under, I mean, the gimmick I thought sucked, but I mean, for the NGO, it was great. For WWE, you know, but I mean, he was good in the ring and he was a good guy. And Sullivan, I mean, geez, it's Kevin Sullivan for crying out loud. I mean, you know, I just think we, you know, did a really good job on that card. And yeah, I was just moving the card around. By God, he's staring at me. So I had to turn that over because that was freaking me out. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just whether you want to use them in different roles, whether you want to do the whole, you know, evil Florida thing where he's, you know, got the cult and the whole thing going, or, you know, you just want to use him wherever. I mean, I thought the card kind of worked. So, yeah, really a couple really vastly different, but pretty cool additions to a set like this.
And Corey.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Sullivan card turned out well. Like Chad said, kind of hard to stat. I don't remember if Chad made these stats or Tim, but I like the mechanic with the foreign object where it can, you know, he can use it once and kind of get away with it. But then the more he does it, you know, he's kind of just doesn't care about getting disqualified or not. He's just out to hurt the opponent. I mean, he had a lot of matches, even in ones we might consider enhancement matches that ended in DQs where the opponent, you know, beat him because he just wanted to hurt the guy. Chad?
Yeah, I think I did that stat and I came up with that because he would just more flagrantly do it and, mm-hmm. you know, got to the back where he's like strangling a guy with a freaking coat hanger. I mean,
yep.
That's a bit much.
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm. And Val Venus, you know, I definitely remember from the Monday Night Wars era. That was a card, you know, I think I did his stats. But this was one where, I mean, I could have done a lot of the moves without watching matches. I remember, you know, he was a guy, especially for the modern era, that, you know, obviously the money shot was his primary finisher, but that fisherman suplex and that kind of reverse figure four, I remember him winning matches on TV with that. You know, maybe sometimes on those like lower level shows like Jacked and Metal that were on in the late 90s. But yeah, I remembered a lot of his spots and a lot of his moves very well. Like Chad said, hard to stat because, you know, he got a big push coming when he first debuted and everything. But like a lot of those gimmicks and characters from the era, you know, just kind of went down the card a little bit, would come back here and there. And have, like I say, like Chad said, have his short runs with a title here and there. But yeah, kind of hard to figure out. I think overall we did a good job of representing what he did in his career in the WWE. You know, he can win titles in your Fed and may not hold them for a very long time, but you never know.
Thank you, gentlemen. And again, I thought the artwork was solid. I don't think there's a dud in this bunch, really, on the artwork for the most part, at least. I mean, this is some strong, strong stuff. The next two names are Lou Thesz and Jerry Lynn. And Lou Thesz is the gentleman I alluded to that at the time I was thinking we would never get him. And I think it was Chad who called me, and all he said, I think he left a message on my voicemail, is, "We got Thesz." And I was like, no way. And that was a huge name, at least for me, I suspect for a fair amount of other promoters to get in this game. Was one of our biggest ones yet. And I had a lot of fun with Thesz as a wrestler. He is a multi-time world champion for me in my little title tours. Tends to hold the belt a decent amount of time each time he has it. Has had a great feud with Buddy Rogers. I thought that card was very well constructed. Represents Thesz very well. And also the artwork on that is fantastic. That's a classic Thesz pose. I mean, what more can you say? Getting Lou Thesz was just a huge get for this game and really helped us, I think, in a lot of ways to get one of the, you know, arguably the greatest wrestler of all time. He's certainly on the short list of when people are thinking about their greatest of all time. And it's awesome to have Lou Thesz in the game in any way you slice it. Jerry Lynn, for me, I have put him in my indie fed in terms of having him compete for their title on my little title tours, which I've done sporadically on the indie fed. I'm doing more of that now with Impact Pro. Jerry Lynn was a solid modern star. I remember his feud with Van Damme, or that match with Van Damme. What was it? Was that Barely Legal or was it another pay-per-view?
No, I mean, they feuded over the TV title over a number of pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they didn't wrestle Barry Lee.
It was, I remember a specific match watching that and being very impressed with those two, and specifically Jerry Lynn. Totally underrated modern guy. Has done a lot of, wrestled in a lot of promotions, certainly on the indie scene, had his cup of coffee, if we want to call it that, a little more than that, with the majors. But a great wrestler to have. I think his card was statted very well, and that he can compete with the guys who have been in the big leagues, but he can also compete favorably with guys in the indies too. And I like that, and have slotted him in the independent fed, like I said, for me. Any thoughts on these gentlemen? Corey, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, Thesz has been a great USWA champion. You know, came in and was undefeated for about a year and a half, game time at least. When he won the title, held it for about 14 months his first time, ended up being, I believe, a four-time champ. I paired him with Strangler Lewis as his manager, who was his manager in real life, and just a good combination there. But I think the card turned out really well. You know, double plus two finisher, not something we see very often in Legends, but for a guy of his stature, you know, he needed to be tough, strong offense, strong level three defense, especially. Yeah, that needed to be accurate. Jerry Lynn, I think I made his card. One hard to stat as far as like limiting the number of moves, or, you know, limiting which moves you're going to put on the card, obviously being very action-packed style. You know, Stu talked about the RVD matches. It was kind of hard to pick 18 moves to put on the card. And also kind of hard too, because, you know, and again, on that indie level and like the ECW level, big star, and other places, you know, he was featured, but not as big of a star. So kind of hard to figure out his place. But I think the card represents, you know, good. You can have good long matches with certain guys who are of that level. Kind of get those marathon matches and a lot of high spots. But maybe not winning your top title. I've used him in my when we were doing our combined promotion here with our draft and everything. And actually, it was his color card, but used that and enjoyed using him. And hope to bring him in into one of my feds at some point.
Good stuff, Corey. Tim, any thoughts on these two?
You know, Jerry Lynn, I mean, he kind of came to prominence with me, just that feud with the Lightning Kid. You know, I just watching that, I was like, holy crap. And you really kind of came out with respect for Waltman, but then you're like, hey, you know, this guy he's fighting is pretty good too. You know, I just that's what really kind of brought Jerry Lynn to the forefront for me. And just had a really solid career, and I mean, is still involved, you know, behind the scenes, and just a really solid guy that you could just rely on to go out and just have good matches and do what he had to do, whether he was, you know, winning or whether he was losing. I mean, he was great. Just a really cool addition to the game. Fez, I mean, you know, I'm the one that kind of cemented that one and got Charlie to Charlie Fez, Lou's widow, to sign off on that. I remember she wanted to see the artwork before we went final on it. And I remember contacting Steve Stanley and said, hey, this needs to be good. And when I saw the draft of it, I was like, holy shit, this is good. This is really good. And so I knew she would have no problem. And wound up going through the his scrapbook at the Waterloo Hall of Fame and just looking for moves and stuff. And I remember the drop kicks, you know, putting that on there. He won matches with drop kicks, although, and in the newspapers, they, because he would do the flat back drop kick and they would call it the kangaroo kick, but I didn't want to put that on the card. And now MJF has kind of, you know, in the last couple of years has kind of made that a thing again. But he would do that like straight flat back drop kick and actually won some matches and on, you know, on his road to the first NWA title. But just outstanding. I mean, it was just such a big sign. I remember because this was going on when we signed him, it was going on at the same time as Galacticon. And the only person's phone number I had that was at Galacticon at the time was Rob Bobian. And I called Rob and I told him, I'm like, hey, we just signed freaking Lou Fez. I said, let people there know. So this wasn't a big secret. This got out pretty quick. But we released the cards soon after that. But yeah, I was thrilled. I mean, it's just what a name, you know, to have for a wrestling game. I mean, if you can get Lou Fez, I mean, that's a big deal. So just you know, boy, that was just great. I was overjoyed with the signing of Luthez, I will say.
I agree. That was definitely a watershed moment for me. Let's see who have now. Chad, how about your thoughts on these two?
Yeah, I start off again. Artwork is amazing for both of them. I really like on Jerry Lynn's card, and it's on the Bushwhackers cards too. I can't believe I called them that, the Sheepherders. The kind of shadow effects of the same artwork, but like over one shoulder's kind of light and one shoulder's dark. It's just amazing. I think amazing stuff from Steve Stanley. And like Tim mentioned, you know, I first learned of Jerry Lynn in that feud with Lightning Kid. You know, they were both wrestling up for in Pro Wrestling America up in Minneapolis and feuded there and then became a tag team. And from that, they, you know, went to global together to feud. They toured in Japan together and wrestled in the Universal, like the UWA over there, which was a lucha group in Japan. And it would be great. It would be great to get the Lightning Kid, and I would want him first as the Lightning Kid. To me, that was always his best persona. I think with Jerry Lynn, he might be a guy where we maybe had to juice his stats up a little bit to keep up with Rob Van Dam, because Rob Van Dam's card got so juiced up by Tom in editing a bit. So you know, to make him competitive. And I mean, I'm not saying it Jerry Lynn is, you know, out of this world or anything, But I just, you know, he's got a fairly tough card. But I do like what you said, Stu, that he can blend in with Legends, because I would certainly want to have him in that area as well. You know, wrestling, you know, IPW guys. He's a guy who, had he come 10 years later, we would have definitely been using him in IPW, you know, and I would, or if TS Aggressor and Mr. Destiny came a few years earlier, and maybe their paths did cross, you know, I'll ask Trav about that sometime. You know, he certainly would have been on cards with them up in Minnesota too. And I mean, Lou Thesz, you know, I just remember Mrs. Thesz had been asked before, not by us. And, you know, so we, you know, we've been going to the Hall of Fame since the beginning, always wore suits and dressed nicely. And, you know, those first few years, she didn't always remember our names, but she liked us because we dressed up and looked nice at the Hall of Fame. And she said, "Oh, anything for you boys." You know, she always called us her boys. And when you talk about that dropkick, she put out a DVD set, or just a DVD, and it had a match with him and Buddy Rogers, which I think is online now. But it's like a 45-minute to an hour match. And then I think there's another match against maybe Killer Kowalski or somebody. I don't remember who the other match is. But she sold him at the Hall of Fame. And I remember getting home and we were watching it. And I don't remember if it was Thez or Rogers, but one of them threw such a stiff
Rogers.
drop kick. It was Rogers, Corey. Thank you.
Yes, yep, Rogers.
I remember he just threw this smoking drop kick. And Emily is a, you know, new wrestling fan. She's like, "That looks, you know, that looks real. You know, that looked pretty rough." And it was just a good shoot drop kick. Like
And
Takata, like Takata, not Maeda.
correct. And Fez suplexed Rogers later, and that
Yes.
looked like that was pretty legit too. And I was like, man, you know, that might have been a little bit of a receipt for that drop kick, because that looked pretty tough too.
But I love this artwork of Fez, because it's got a, you know, it's got no background, it's very plain. You know, for him, having a towel over his shoulder was his gimmick. But I mean, gosh, the definition is face. You can tell he's got a cauliflowered left ear. I mean, it is just freaking amazing artwork.
Corey.
Just kind of going back to Jerry Lynn for a second, and Chad talking about his, you know, time in the Midwest and the Indies. I mean, I wish I could have been, you know, here for when he and Waltman were working up here. I mean, they were working not far from my house. From everything I've read about and the videos I've seen, there was a bar in Fridley, which is just kind of west of here. It's kind of between St. Paul, Minneapolis, where they would regularly hold some of those PWA TV tapings. And that place doesn't even exist anymore. I think it's like a Walgreens or something like that, sadly.
Was
But
it
I hear,
George's? What was the bar called?
yeah, I think so. It was somebody's name.
It
I
was
think it
like a
was
dude's name, yeah.
yeah, I think it was I think George's sounds right.
Or Jorge's.
No, not quite.
Not Jorge.
Not
Okay.
quite. Yeah. But I mean, just knowing that such great wrestling took place not far from here, it just boggles my mind. And you know, I'm nothing against the indies now. There's still some great indies up here today. But I just wish he either could have come along later, or I could have been here earlier just to see him in person.
I found a little bit on YouTube. Not a whole ton, not a whole lot, but I'll check some of this out later. That would have been pretty cool to have seen. I've been heavily tempted to use Jerry Lynn in my IPW. Think I've got him ready to roll. I just wanted to see how Mr. Destiny was going to do with this, and he had a really, really good title reign using just cards that were specific to those two first two sets, but I'm definitely gonna I think I'm gonna use Jerry Lynn now, especially after hearing Chad your take on him. Good deal. Well, next up, one of my favorites, certainly as a tag team, because they're just absolutely bonkers, is the Sheepherders. Tim, why don't you lead that discussion for us?
Yeah, I thought this was a really cool sign. Was not expecting this one in the least. I mean, you know, Butch Miller, Luke Williams, just they were such a, you know, watching them as the Bushwhackers and then watching them as the Sheepherders, it's like you just can't reconcile the two. Because you've got, you know, they came into WWF and they were doing this kind of goofy gimmick and all of that. And I'm like, well, you know, it's probably best because, you know, you're playing up to kids, although these guys had foreheads on them that looked like the roadmap of downtown Chicago from all the blood they'd drawn over the years. I mean, I really want, I said, and one of the first things I said was, you know, I don't want to do the bushwhackers with these guys. I really want to do the sheep herders because they were just so cool and so good. And they were just so out there and crazy, as the sheep herders. And, I just thought, you know, it was great to have them in the game. And I was really hoping at some point we could get one of their big rivals. And eventually we got the Fantastics in there. Mm-hmm. Which was even cooler, to get them as well. But just a lot of fun having, again, a great, you know, one of those, that work cards where the artwork connects, and, just a great job by Steve Stanley on this. I mean, just the character in their faces is just fantastic. And you could see like the scarred up foreheads, and you can just almost kind of feel all the wars that they've been through and the carnage and all of that. I just thought it was great. And I think it was just an awesome signing to get these guys in the game. And I really enjoyed having them, and wish I could have used them, you know, more than I did. I used them a couple times just, outside of my NWF, just to kind of see how things would go, and was just getting ready to kind of bring them in, when I stopped playing, unfortunately. I was really looking forward to using these guys because they were something special.
And they, y'all statted them well. I've used them a fair amount, excuse me, certainly in a feud against the Fantastics, and they feel like the sheep herders, which is, I definitely wanted that version versus the Bushwhackers. Chad, any thoughts on these guys?
Well, what I love about the artwork, you know, it's got the shadowing over the shoulder, but it's the partner's picture.
Yeah.
It's not their picture. It's just fun to go back and look at this artwork because it's so detailed. It's so amazing. I remember it was kind of hard because I statted the cards. It was kind of hard to get finishers for them because, again, in JCP or UWF, they just kind of beat the shit out of people. I think they did use the gut buster a little bit, but, you know, we went ahead and put the battering ram on there as kind of a concession if somebody wanted to have, you know, the cuddly bushwhackers. And, you know, their style didn't really change, you know, they're a little less murderous, but, you know, that back elbow ram, they both did that, you know, kind of the Buddy Rose is the first person I ever saw do that. So that's what I always think of, but a lot of guys picked that up. I mean, these were fun to make, and I'm going to say, I think we did a good job with the moveset on those because I look at the moves in these cards, like, oh, yep, I see them doing that. You know, that fist drop Butch Miller did. He's not coming off the ropes like Jerry Lawler, but he kind of hit the ropes and come off and kick his legs out sideways and pop it right down on you while you're in the middle of the mat. The double thrust. Yeah, a lot of fun. I never used these guys, but I think this is one of the first times that we used COTG online and put in stats and play tested, and we play tested them against a lot of teams to try to get them to the right spot. Because, you know, I mean, even though we were wigging out to have them, it's like, you know, they're not supposed to be beating the Road Warriors or anything. Although that would be a hell of a match, just watch them pound the piss out of each other. Put those guys on a scaffold with the Road Warriors with barbed wire. That's my suggestion.
Corey. Thoughts on the sheep herders, sir?
I was very excited to get them as well. Again, kind of a team that I just didn't think was going to be possible to sign, but really excited. And I'm glad, you know, kind of as others have said here, that, you know, we could do them as either sheep herders or bushwhackers. You know, we use sheep herders name in the booklet and everything, but stylistically, you know, if you were more of a WWF fan, they could be the bushwhackers. If you liked them before the WWF, you could use them as the sheep herders. I've not yet used these cards, but I, looking at the stats here, I really want to bring them in at some point, and I would definitely use them as heels first, as the sheep herders. But I remember them very much as the bushwhackers as a kid, doing the march to the ring and the arm waving and all that. I got to see them as the bushwhackers After the WWF, they did an indie show where I lived in Findlay, Ohio. This was during the Monday Night Wars era. I don't know, like, there was never really a name for this promotion, and I don't know who the promoter was, but he was bringing in people from WWF or WCW, you know, kind of lower level people, that he was able to get in and, you know, get them to work these indie shows. And they wrestled Public Enemy, and I was actually more excited to see Public Enemy. Got my picture with those guys. Yeah, they wrestled. I think it was the main event or semi-main event. Kevin Sullivan was on that card too. Now that I think about it, he wrestled Vincent Virgil, and I think I want to say, oh yeah, Disciple, Brutus Beefcake was on there too, and yeah, I don't remember who was backing this show.
Bobby Fulton running that, because he still does, but
yeah, it could have been. They didn't really advertise who it was. Just kind of said like pro wrestling. Well, I tell you what, I mean, the biggest name they brought in was a few months before that, and I had to miss the show. They had Dude Love the same weekend that he wrestled Steve Austin on one of those pay-per-views, and that blew my mind that they got Dude Love.
What?
Yeah, he mentions that in his book. In the first book. Yeah, I don't know how the heck that happened, but
they had a lot of money for that one, I bet.
Yep. But yeah, going back to the Sheep Herders, now I think they did a really good job on them, making them tag specialists and everything. But yeah, really cool. Really cool to get them in the game.
Thank you, gentlemen. And I agree. And I as well love that artwork. Next up, we've got two women wrestlers, Jazz and Nora Greenwald. So, Corey, why don't you lead us in the discussion on both of those?
Sure. And I think I did the stats on these, and I mentioned as well, just kind of for historical sake, these were considered limited edition cards as part of the set, you know, technically separate from the set proper, but released at the same time, as well as the next two names we'll talk about after them. But yeah, really cool to have some modern women in the game. You know, they kind of transitioned the WWE from the bra and panties phase of women's wrestling to a little more serious product with Trish Stratus and several others as well. And I always enjoyed both of these ladies. Nora from nearby Forest Lake, Minnesota, just a couple miles up the road from me. And she's still around this area, shows up at indie shows from time to time. You know, I always liked her. She did a couple different gimmicks, obviously Molly Holly and Mighty Molly. And even before that, WCW, I remember watching her when she was kind of with Macho Man, and they gave her a few matches here or there. But yeah, I always really, really enjoyed her, like that she was athletic and tough. And just kind of a little bit different in that sense from some of the other ladies. You know, with that, the finisher there, just thought after watching some matches that it should have some kind of miss mechanic on it. And that's why I kind of gave it a little bit tougher rating of a +2, but then the chance of missing. And then Jazz, I always really enjoyed her as well. Talk about somebody who was different than the other ladies. Tough, you know, mean looking, strong. Kind of a hard one to do as far as like the power rating. You know, she's kind of shorter, but just jacked and just, you know, tough. And I think what we gave her was accurate. I remember a lot of the move, again, kind of like I talked about with Val Venus, I remembered a lot of her moves, even without watching matches. You know, I think the one thing, those that remember her in ECW, she did that Jazz Stinger, which was the face buster. Didn't put that on here because she never really used it when she wrestled women in the WWE, at least in anything that I saw. So I just kind of wanted to reflect her time wrestling women, more than anything. But yeah, I remember she just beat on people and win with either that STF or the bitch clamp. And I think we had to ask Tom's permission to put bitch on the card.
I believe there was an issue with that. Yeah. I remember when that went on there as the finish. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But he allowed us to do that. He said, well, that's the name. And you know, these days we can say that or something like that. He had a good reason behind it, but yeah, you know, I haven't started a women's division yet. I think I do plan to at some point. I've kind of got some long-term plans for that. And these would definitely be two ladies that I'd want to have in my Fed.
Thank you, Corey. Chad, thoughts on these two?
Well, I will say, if you want to meet Jazz, come this summer to the Trego Stance Hall of Fame 25th anniversary show, July 18th through 20th in Waterloo, Iowa. You know, hey, Tim, I can shill too. Jazz will be one of our honored guests, and she'll be there. You can get your little cards autographed. Nora Greenwald, I always enjoyed her. And you know what? I met one of her best friends from growing up last year at the Trego Sands Hall of Fame. There was a family staying there, and I don't remember even how. Oh, I remember how. So we're sitting in the bar the first night, me and Troy.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
The night that the gentleman said, I've never seen somebody drink so many old fashions. I'm sitting there at the bar watching baseball or whatever, and all of a sudden there's about a six-year-old girl sits on the bar stool next to me and starts chatting it up. And her mom and dad come over and said, oh, she likes to talk. I went, I like to talk to her. So we became friends with this family, and they were staying there while the dad was working on a project or something. But she grew up with Nora Greenwald and had pictures to prove anything. It's not that we, you know, didn't believe her, because I don't really know how many people would claim that. But she was trying to reach out to her for us. And, you know, I think we lost touch with that one. So it would maybe someday we'll have Nora Greenwald at the Trego Stas Hall of Fame, where you can get that card autographed too. But yep, I agree with Corey. It's good to have some modern women in there as well and help bolster those ranks.
Thank you, Chad. Tim?
Yeah, ditto. I mean, it was really cool to have them. They were both different, you know, for their time, right? I mean, Jazz was just this, like, you know, like cut up, you know, tough looking, you know, woman that could just go out and you really felt like she could just like kick everybody's ass. Whereas, you know, you get the Molly Holly and it was a little bit different, but man, she could go in the ring. And everything was good. And I was just, I thought we had two really great additions, you know, two really different women that didn't kind of fall into the, you know, that kind of thing where everybody looks the same or wrestles the same or does the same kind of style or whatever. They both had their own style and really were unique personalities. So, thought they were just really good additions to the game.
Thank you, gentlemen. I agree. And Jazz, well, I've started a women's tour. I do it rather sporadically. Jazz has been a little fun in that. Hadn't won it yet, but she's tough. Let's go to, well, Chad, the aforementioned Mr. X. Chad, why don't you lead us in that discussion before he became Dr. X?
Yeah, so, you know, Tom wanted us to make Mr. X car that was just a very anonymous dirt jobber, and that's what this is. So, you know, he's not any particular Mr. X, not the Dangerous Danny Davis version, but he's just the good old classic generic jobber that you would have wearing a mask running around. You could certainly use him for a tag team as well. I think, was he the first guy we did the auto pin thing on?
Yes.
And I think Tom wanted that, right?
I believe so, yeah.
I believe that is correct, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I know some people at the time were a little like, oh, it's not such and such Mr. X. It's like, well, you can go through the annals of history of wrestling and probably find about 15 Mr. X's. So
at least.
We were talking before we started recording about how you could do an angle where Mr. X goes to school and then becomes Dr. X, or you could say that it's his son because his dad didn't know how to wrestle. So Dr. X went to wrestling school and became Dr. X. He got a PhD in wrestling. Fans, we just like to write angles and give them away. So there you go.
Booking your feds for you. All you got to do is just follow along.
Yep. I hope everyone uses that. And for being like a made up shit bag, I thought the artwork was pretty good too.
It is pretty good for a made up shit bag.
Yeah.
Corey, thoughts on Mr. X?
Yeah, I've used this card for quite a while in my USWA, and you know, I don't remember if we put this in his bio or where kind of the idea came from, but you know, I use him as different enhancement talent from the Memphis territory. So one week he'll be like Roy Rogers, and another week he's Tony Falk, and like Chad said, I've used him as a tag team. I will do like, you know, keep separate fatigue tokens should the match go that long. Often he doesn't even get to tag out to himself. But no, it's fun to kind of do it that way too. You know, Memphis had a share of kind of undercard mass tag teams for a while. So he'll be the Dominoes one week or somebody else. And yeah, it's just a fun card. He's gotten a couple wins in my Fed. I was just telling these guys, actually just recently, he's beaten one wrestler twice. And I'll save that. I've got to catch up on my discussion board posts. But you can look for that in the coming months or year. We'll see how soon I get to it. But he's defeated one same wrestler two times, and he's also he also defeated in a tag team match. It was, I think it was he and George South, and I'm blanking right now which wrestler he was. I'll think of it, I'm sure. They beat Paul London and Brian Kendrick. Very fluke win. I think London missed a death jump, and it was like a snake eyes pin. So, you know, just something like that. London and Kendrick got their win back later, but yeah, he's had some memorable times, in my USWA as various people.
Excellent. Thank you, Corey. Tim, any thoughts on Mr. X?
Yeah, I believe the photo reference might've been Frankie Williams. And then they drew the Mr. X mask on him. Frankie Williams from Columbus, Ohio, famous, you know, jobber to the stars.
Famous for Kevin Butcher also.
Hi, well, Kevin. There you go. But yeah, so I just think that it was kind of cool to do that. But yeah, he was not based on any Mr. X at all. We just came up with really stinky stats for somebody. I think we may have actually had to make him worse at some point when we did him the rough draft, and then Tom wanted him. He's like, no, we can't do, we got to have him be even worse. He can't, you know, this is going to be a guy that shouldn't win a match.
Yeah, he should. I think he said make him stinkier or something. He was not bad enough. It's like, really?
Yeah, we thought we made him pretty bad. And he's like, no, he needs to be worse than this. And we're like, okay. So we did. And we tried to create somebody that was just terrible. But I did the same thing as Corey. I used him as different people, you know, like I probably used him as like Silvano Sousa and Jeff Craney and, you know, Fred Marzino and all these WWF jobbers that came through, you know, in the early to mid 80s. That I used to see on the shows that I would go to. Yeah, I thought it was really kind of neat to have a guy like that in here and somebody you could use. And I had similar stats for, I just kind of created like I had Mr. X and Mr. Y, and Y would be like the tag team guy, you know, his tag team partner. But I would do alternate that where he would be like if Mr. X was a little bit more of a baby face, he would have like a little bit more of a heelish thing. And I would change like to the opposite charts, you know, and things like that, so that they were kind of mirror images of one another, but they were both equally stinky. So was able to use them in tag team action as well. But I just thought it was a cool idea to do that. And I thought that was a great idea by Tom. And, you know, I thought he was kind of a cool addition to everybody's Fed, because that became the thing, like, okay, you know, post the first match that Mr. X ever wins. And that kind of became a thing for a little while. So I thought that was pretty neat.
Well, plus you use the, in your WWF bootleg set, you use, you know, you had a list of jobbers and said, use Mr. X for that, you know, and Pete Fusco did that for his JCP sets too, and used that. And I think a lot of folks did that. And that's probably why right now my Mr. X card is not with my Legends 10 set, because I've been using him in my Georgia Championship Wrestling set as a variety of preliminary guys.
Yeah. And so what I did in my bootleg set was I just listed in the back like a bunch of guys and their weights and hometowns, and said, you know, use Mr. X for these guys. And that way you could fill your card out with all these guys and use actual names and stuff like that, and not just have to have Mr. X wrestle like seven times on your card or anything. You know, you could use, you know, different names for people who were equally as bad. Or I shouldn't say equally as bad, but who were equally as winless as Mr. X would be.
And he's also a guy you could use in your Champions of the Galaxy Fed. He's timeless. He could travel through space and time. And he kind of harkens back to the first Galacticon, when Tom was talking about having a prelim guy. And he had written up like a little bulletin thing, and I still have it. And I remember I have notes on there that he originally thought about making the prelim guy who became Ursa Major, maybe just like generic, yeah, you know, not have a name or anything.
And I think we kind of used Ursa Major kind of as a little
I
bit
think
of
so
an,
too.
You know, as a boilerplate for Mr. X when we were looking at it. We're like, do we really want to give him a pin 10-7? Because, you know, Ursa had that 10-7 pin.
Yep.
And so we're kind of going back and forth on a lot of things. But yeah, that was fun doing that card.
Yeah.
Good deal. And that whole has Mr. X won a match for you promoters, it was revived when the Mulkeys came along. So they perhaps took it to another level in terms of being really just rotten cards. But Mr. X was a novel concept. It was really cool to get him. Last but certainly not least, we have a guy we just talked about a few weeks ago, Super Crazy, who is part of our winter edition, if you want to call it the four pack. And speaking of guys that feuded with Jerry Lynn, he was one of them. Started in Mexico, made his way to the United States, could fill a number of roles for you. He'd be good in a stable of wrestlers. He could be good as a hardcore type of wrestler if you wanted to. He could be a great junior heavyweight or just a good old wrestler. I think Super Crazy fills a lot of niches on the card. Another outstanding piece of artwork. And again, I know I've said this three or four times tonight, but not a dud in the bunch. Steve Stanley did some fantastic work for Legends back in the day. But any thoughts on Super Crazy, gentlemen? Corey, why don't we start with you this time?
Sure. Again, I think I made the stats for him. I'm pretty sure I did. You know, when we just recently updated him to color, there wasn't too much to change there. Kind of got a lot of the moves right the first time. But yeah, fun card to do. You know, somebody with a automatic death jump, which we don't do a whole lot of in Legends, but made sense given his style and everything. And again, kind of a harder one to do because it kind of like Jerry Lynn, you know, so many moves. And especially if you're watching a lot of those matches with like Tajiri, Guido, some of those guys, you know, a lot of things out of the ring. How do you get that on the card? You kind of have to improvise a little bit. But, you know, I think for his level in history, I think we got him at a good place. And yeah, I'm glad we could get him in color here just, you know, a month or so ago. Again, yeah, another card that I haven't used yet, but I'd like to at some point. Might be a good fit for my IPW or something like that. We'll see what happens.
Excellent. Tim?
You know, one of the things I always loved about him when he was in ECW was when he would do the 10 punches in the corner and they would count in Spanish. And I just said, and I'm glad we put that on there, you know, and Corey put that on there. I was like, this is just like one of the coolest spots when they're just counting along in Spanish. I thought that was just the greatest thing. But yeah, he was one of those guys. You always knew you were going to see something when he was involved in a match. You knew you were going to see something that was really cool. And he would go out there and he was going to do something. And you were going to be entertained. And it was going to be whether he won or lost, whoever he was fighting, it was going to be one of those matches where you just felt like you got your money's worth and you got your ticket price out of this. But just a really cool guy, again, a newer kind of addition to the game. And I just thought that was great. And it was just kind of another unexpected gem that we got out of this. And I thought it was just a really, just a great guy to add.
Agreed. Thank you, Tim. Chad?
So I don't remember why we... You know, the set had 10 cards. This is a limited edition. You can kind of get it with the two women because around that time we would maybe, if we had some remnant wrestlers, we'd have them as limited edition to keep the card at 10. We did the Mr. X, which I get. It's like, why did we make Super Crazy a limited edition? You know? And maybe if we saved him, then Legends final chapter could have had 7 cards instead of 6. But no, I mean, yeah, the artwork's phenomenal. It was good to bring him in with Jerry Lynn. And, you know, you could throw him in there with Rob Van Dam and, you know, Liger and Tiger Mask and some of the other modern or high-flying junior heavyweights, cruiserweights that we had at the time. Yeah, I'm glad. Yeah, it does seem like we just spoke about it because we did.
We did, but it was certainly nice to get him in color. And nice to have Super Crazy in a color edition. Well, that, promoters, concludes our review of Legends 10. Again, a solid set. I mean, for Thez alone, it was a solid set, but the Sheep Herders, Bill Dundee, Eddie Gilbert, come on. This thing was loaded. Kevin Sullivan, I know there are a lot of Kevin Sullivan fans amongst the promoters. This was a solid, solid set with some spectacular artwork, fun stats, and, you know, holds up now. It was a really good set, well done by the Legends team here, and I got a lot of use out of a number of these cards. I think probably one of my favorite sets in terms of Legends, all in looking back at this and looking at some of these names and how much I've used them. So good stuff, gentlemen. Much appreciated. With that, we're going to go to our wrap-ups and our shout-outs, which is tradition. So, Chad, you are up first and get to kick things off.
All right. I'd like to take a minute to thank everybody who listened and commented on episode 175, our fantastic review of Club Galactica Super Report of February 1991. TTX, Gunslinger, Swarm, Kevin the Butcher, Throwing Toasters Grant, Sinestro 24, The Faction, Bike Fortune, Matt, Vegas, and Paul. Thank you all for commenting, and we hope you enjoyed the episode. We hope everyone enjoyed the episode. And other than that, I will just say, you know what? There's a lot of folks right now going through a lot of stuff. So just, hey, you can, like I always say, you can be a leader, you can be a follower, never be an asshole. Stay safe and be excellent to each other.
True words have never been spoken. Tim.
Well, you know, going back to the set just for a second, I just want to say one thing I really like too, talking about the booklet. I mean, the bios were shit, but the booklet, other than that, sorry, Stu, I'm just busting your chops. I really love the cover photo, with the sheep herders on there. I thought that was kind of cool. And then this was also the set. If you look on the back cover, which has got the William Muldoon bio, also talked about the, tag team, like the Havoc rule, that it became kind of known as. About you know, kind of instituting that as kind of the official rule for the Legends cards, which was something new and different, just because we had run into issues with like some of the cards, like we've talked about with like Johnny Valiant and Road Warrior Hawk, just being really tougher in singles just because of you know, re-rolling the tag move on the same level, and all of that. So I thought this was just an option that you know, we kind of gave everybody. I mean, we kind of put it in there as a new tag team rule. Some people followed it. I'm sure some people didn't. You know, it's your game. You could do whatever the hell you want. But I thought that was pretty cool that we kind of tried to make that like the official you know, policy for Legends.
But if you don't follow that rule, you're playing the game wrong.
Wrong. It's all wrong. You need to go back and redo it all.
Guys, I think I was just an asshole. I'll try better tomorrow.
You probably were.
I'll try better tomorrow.
Well, there you go.
I don't know what, did we put that in the Ringside Companion Volume 1?
The rule?
Yeah. I might have to slide that into Volume 2 coming this year. Killzinger Games, baby.
Yep.
Woo!
Is that done yet?
It's done.
I mean, it's done. Yeah. It's just, but you know what? I've thought of a couple other matches to put in there. So now it's a little less done, but it'll be done.
Oh, boy.
No, these are going to be good. These are going to be good.
Oh, here's the barbed wire scaffold match coming.
No, scaffolds. No. I promise, you know, not a scaffold match.
Triton truck and high seas match. There you go.
That'll
cause people not to buy the book.
Right. So they'll ask for money back. No, these are matches that people have asked about in a roundabout way. So I'm going to work on them. Because I love to give.
I'm glad they've asked for them in a roundabout way and not a, you know, trapezoidal way.
Right. But, no, I mean, people have talked about it, but there hasn't been like a big campaign. They haven't gone on like change.org or anything to start a petition.
Okay. I don't know what that is because that's an internet thing. So it good. Is. I'm glad people haven't gone there because that would be bad. The internet is bad. But other than that, You know, I got nothing else this week. I just want to thank everybody for listening. You know, we'll be back again next time with episode 177, which just boggles my mind. You know, I hope everybody's enjoying what we're doing, and we're giving it an effort every week, obviously. So, you know, we'll be back again, because we just keep doing this until we get, you know, booted off the bad internet. So we'll see how that goes.
It could happen any day. Thank you, Tim. Much appreciated. Appreciate your thoughts. Corey, what's on your mind this week?
Well, thank you, first of all, Sue, for hosting. I want to give attention to the other Filsinger Games content providers out there, Coach Grant Pachoco and the Solo Promoter YouTube channel, Dave Little at Heartland Championship Wrestling, Brock Atkinson at Brockster Builds, as well as Brock and Mike's Filsinger Games Character Spotlight, Brad Plays 81 on YouTube, and Lee Longpre's YouTube channel. I'm also going to mention one of the promoters that Chad mentioned in his shout-outs, Paul, on the discussion board for our episode 175 post. I love that he ended his post with Yabba Dabba Doo. That was probably a first time that's been said in relation to our podcast, and that needs to be said more. I think somebody needs that as a catchphrase. But thank you, Paul, for mentioning that. I got a big kick out of that today. Also want to give a couple other shout outs. First of all, to a fellow teacher at my school, Chris Mackey is his name, today at lunch. So Chris teaches our digital media arts class, which involves video editing and podcast making. And somehow I mentioned that I had a podcast, and he asked what it was about, and he was asking great questions about the game and everything else. So just thank you for taking the time to learn about this hobby. And I even sent him the Filsinger Games website. He is not a wrestling fan, but he is into like role-playing games and things like that. So, you know, he said he would look at the website and check it out. He had a lot of good questions. I was going to
say, do you still have a friend?
I do. I do. I'm an even better friend now. So, and then we do have another country to add to our listening audience. I think it's been a little while. And, you know, as I said, sometimes I forget which ones I've mentioned or not. But this one, are you ready?
Oh, hit me.
We want to give attention to those listeners in the country of Latvia. So thank you, Latvia. Thank you.
Dr. Doom listens to our podcast? That is freaking amazing.
Victor, what's happening? Apparently.
Holy crap. I'm scared of that guy.
Hi, Victor. No, we want to be nice to him.
Yes. Hello, yes. Mr. Dr.
Hello, Victor.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Doom to you, Timothy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're close. We're tight. I got first. I'm on a first name basis.
He was Mr. Doom, and then he went to college with Dr. X and became Dr. Doom.
There you go. He got his doctorate.
We need a card for Mr. Doom before he puts on the armor. And
there you go. But yes, so thank you, Latvia. Whoever our listener or listeners are in Latvia, you know, send us a message. We'd love to hear from you. And just thanks once again, everybody, for clicking, listening, and downloading.
All right. Thank you, Corey. Appreciate that. Hard to top Latvia, but I'm not even going to attempt to do that. I want to just give a shout out. I've been playing it as of late to Go Fight Pal, a friend of the show, Eric Konishny. We've had him on at least once, maybe twice. I can't even remember. And just having a lot of fun with that. He has so many wrestlers, so many fighters, I guess, if you want to call them in that particular game. Very well done. Love the artwork. Love the design. Just been having a blast with it. And I know a few of you promoters have picked it up, but I can't recommend it enough. Eric has certainly supported that game and continues to support it with a number of great characters and continues to release a lot of product and a lot of content and supports his community very, very well. So hear, hear, Eric. I think we should do a group watch. I found and have had it running in the background. Jerry Lynn versus the Lightning Kid from 1991 on YouTube. It is interesting. I think I highly recommend that as a group watch coming up relatively soon. Some good stuff there. And with that, I will say goodnight, Denmark. Wrap up this particular show, episode 176. Looking forward to 177 and the inevitable march towards show 200. Promoters, we thank you for being here every step of the way. Look forward to seeing you next week. Hope you enjoyed our program this week, and thanks again for listening.
Hey promoters, it's Corey again, and we would love to hear from you. Please send us your questions, topic suggestions, or any other comments and we might include your audio in a future episode of Uncharted Territory. There's two ways you can do it. You can go to tinyurl.com/UNCTER. Again, tinyurl.com/UNCTER. You can click the message button and record up to a 1-minute message, and we can include that in a future episode. Or you can email us either audio or a written question at our email address, utpodcast2020@gmail.com. Again, utpodcast2020@gmail.com. Want to show your friends that you listen to Uncharted Territory? Well, head on over to our store at tkostore.com/collection/uncharted-territory. You can choose from a shirt or hoodie with Travis Heckel's great podcast cover artwork, or a shirt with a design inspired by one of our favorite bands. While there, check out the other great merchandise at TKO, including shirts of several of the top MMA fighters, including Bigfoot Silva, Tim Sylvia, Ensign Inoue, and more. Need a shirt made for your event or organization? Contact TKO, run by Filsinger Games promoter Justin Bulka, aka Pike Mojo, to place your order. Again, that's tkostore.com, TEEKOstore.com.
Insert wolf music.
I'd like to take a minute to thank everybody who listened and commented on episode 175, our fantastic review of Champions of the Galaxy
Oh my god, Denmark's gonna be awake for like a week.
We're recording, quit bitching.